You may have heard about Dry January or Drynuary, where people give up alcohol for the first month of the year. Our next guest says doing something like that can be a good chance to reevaluate our relationship with alcohol and its role in our lives. For many people who are moderate drinkers, alcohol is used as a tool for relaxation or stress relief, maybe a way to overcome social anxiety. But in a new piece in the Washington Post, our guest says alcohol can actually make anxiety even worse. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you tried a Dry January or another way of taking time away from drinking or cutting back? How did it make you feel? Have you quit drinking altogether? What's it like to be alcohol-free in Wisconsin? Have you noticed a connection between maybe moderate alcohol use and anxiety in your own life? Call 800-642-1234 with your experiences or your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Richard Friedman is professor of clinical psychiatry and director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at Weill Cornell Medical College. Dr. Friedman, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I want to start with our target audience here. Sometimes we talk about chronic heavy drinking or binge drinking. Here, I think a lot of who we're talking about here are going to be moderate drinkers. Can you talk about our working definition of that?
Right. So, well, you know, it keeps changing. But generally speaking, what most people think about as, you know, moderate drinking is in the range of, let's say, you know, 5 to 6 drinks a week. And anything that's more than that is more than a little bit that's moderate. And the reason it changes is because people have different ideas, because there's different information about the effects of alcohol at different levels of drinking. So there's not entirely great definition of what constitutes, you know, let's say optimal drinking.
A big part of the problem with the link between alcohol and anxiety, sort of the upsides and downsides, you write, is that the upsides, the things we get out of it, happen right away. A lot of the negative stuff may be delayed by a few hours or even a couple of days. Let's talk about the science of that a little bit. First of all, why does that instant positive feeling, if we have that from drinking, happen so quickly?
Right. So the reason is alcohol is absorbed very, very quickly into the bloodstream and then into the brain. And so its effects are, you know, initially you feel, you know, mildly calm and relaxed and maybe a little bit euphoric, socially more comfortable, sometimes even a little disinhibited. But that happens really quickly, within minutes, actually. And some of that depends on how quickly you drink. The faster you drink your glass of wine or beer or shot of whiskey, the faster you're going to notice those effects. So the rewarding effects of alcohol happen immediately. There's just no... You don't have to wait long at all. But what happens later is alcohol is metabolized from the body within a few hours, you know, usually within 4 to 6 hours, and then it's gone. And when the alcohol's gone from your body and your brain, that's when all the negative effects of alcohol happen, meaning your anxiety level can actually go up. And if you drink before bed, like most people, you realize that you're suddenly wide awake, like a light bulb was turned on, because your body has metabolized the alcohol and it's now gone. So you're irritable and awake and anxious, kind of the mirror image of the, you know, positive effects of alcohol. Or maybe it happens the next day and, you know, the next day you wake up and all you remember was how good that drink was at night before, but you don't actually connect the anxiety in the late morning or afternoon with the very thing that's probably made it worse, which was your drink at night.
And this is unfortunate, I think ironic for a lot of people, because it's a cliche almost. You feel stressed out. You have a drink to calm down. There's internet memes about how much we rely on that glass of wine or whatever it might be in the evening. What happens if we, I guess, self-medicate, if we treat alcohol as a medicine for stress and anxiety?
So it's actually a pretty bad treatment for depression and anxiety, because it may initially make you feel better, but invariably it's going to make you feel worse the next day. And in order to sustain the effect, you have to drink more the following day, which then sets you up for this kind of self-sustained, you know, downward spiral where more drinking creates more anxiety the next day, which then drives you to want to drink more to cover up or medicate that anxiety. And what you don't realize is you're trapped in this vicious cycle in which the thing you think is your friend and helping you is actually making you more anxious and depressed.
We're talking to doctors.
It's just that there's a time delay.
We're talking to Dr. Richard Friedman from the Psychopharmacology Clinic at Weill Cornell Medical College, talking about alcohol as a stress and anxiety and depression relief, a very bad one, he's saying, that tends to make us more stressed out, anxious, and or depressed over time. You can join in with your questions, maybe your experiences, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Eric joins us now in Portage. Eric, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Eric?
Well, I'm 52, and I've been meaning to quit drinking for the last 15 years, and I was going to quit tomorrow. And so finally, my doctor prescribed me naltrexone, and it took my urges away, and I've been off alcohol for 6 months.
Eric, congratulations on that. Can I ask, if I may, how would you describe your drinking before that? Moderate, heavy, bingey, what did that look like?
I'd say medium. I was like 2 to 6 beers a night, but my wife doesn't drink, so it kind of made me kind of a jerk to be buzzed every night when she doesn't drink. And that naltrexone really helped a lot, take the urges away.
Eric, thank you so much for sharing that experience with. Oh, actually, no, don't go yet, Eric. How are you feeling since you stopped drinking 2 to 6 beers a day?
I feel great. I have more energy. I'm not afraid to drive, and I get along with my wife a little better.
All right. Well, that's good news, Eric. Thank you so much. Dr. Friedman, first of all, the benefits Eric had, you hear this from patients you work with.
Yes, all the time. And first of all, I'm so glad for Eric that, you know, he was able to do it so easily. You know, his doctor gave him naltrexone, which is a commonly used medicine that helps decrease the desire to want to drink. And if you do drink when you're taking naltrexone, it makes the effects of alcohol less rewarding, because it blocks opiate receptors in the brain. And so, Eric, that's just great that it was so effective and that the benefits are so positive.
And Eric also mentioned, Dr. Friedman, getting that medication for somebody who says, okay, gosh, I want to stop drinking for a while or for a long time, but I seem to have trouble doing it. When do we go to a doctor and say, hey, can I try a medication like this?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I think, you know, you try first to do it yourself, and it's hard to do it, obviously, because, you know, there's a rewarding effect initially for alcohol. So there's all kinds of supports that you can get even before you go to the doctor. You can go to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, which is really wonderful, a great support network for people who are having trouble with alcohol. And you can get a sponsor who can help you. And that by itself could actually make it much easier to stop drinking, because you're going to have a lot of motivation and you're going to have a network of colleagues and peers who are going to basically share their experience, and you're not going to feel alone. And of course, you should go to your doctor just to be sure you don't have any medical problems that are being caused by your drinking. And sometimes, you know, medicines like naltrexone can be prescribed to help cut down on your urge to drink and make it easier to stop it.
Thanks a lot for that call, Eric. Tom joins us next in Green Bay. Tom, hi.
Yeah, you were talking about the anxiety. And my question is, I'm an alcoholic, and a lot of us have trouble dealing with anxiety even years later. Did our anxiety cause us to drink, or does the drink cause the anxiety?
Oh, interesting question, Tom. Yeah, chicken or the egg there, Dr. Friedman.
Yeah, well, Tom, that's a wonderful question, because I think it's often both. Sometimes people have a problem with anxiety earlier, long before they started drinking, and they start to drink in order to medicate the anxiety as a treatment for the anxiety, which then makes the anxiety worse. So you could have, let's say, a pre-existing anxiety problem and then be predisposed to getting in trouble with alcohol because you're using alcohol to treat the anxiety. And there's also the possibility that, you know, once you start drinking, it sets up a situation in which you experience anxiety that's the biological effect of too much alcohol. So it could be either scenario. You could have both.
Thanks a lot for that call, Tom. We are talking about the connections between alcohol, anxiety, and depression with Dr. Richard Friedman, professor of clinical psychiatry, director of the psychopharmacology clinic at Weill Cornell Medical College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you trying this dry January thing, taking a break at least from drinking? Do you feel a connection between alcohol and anxiety, whether it's mild or moderate levels of drinking or beyond? Call in with your experiences, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Dr. Richard Friedman, professor of clinical psychiatry, director of the psychopharmacology clinic at Weill Cornell Medical College. In a piece in the Washington Post, he highlights the links between alcohol, anxiety, and depression. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen that connection in your own life? Are you taking a break or cutting back on drinking during dry January? Do you feel any different? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Scott joins us now in Iron River. Scott, hi.
Good afternoon. I grew up in a family that used alcohol every single day, and I was programmed to do the same. And I'm in my 60s now, and I'm still programmed, and I was reading in a book just today about this and how we are programmed neurologically in certain directions for certain things. And I start convincing myself towards in the afternoon and towards evening that I want a drink. And the thing is, guys, I enjoy it. But what I'd like to bring up, the additional thing that I'd like to add to your conversation today, is it doesn't only take the edge off of stress initially, it takes the edge off of the stress, but it also takes the edge off spiritually. I work a spiritual practice, and it takes the edge off of that.
Interesting. Scott, yeah. Thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Friedman, he sees it taking the edge off of the good stuff. We don't enjoy the positive stuff as much as we might, Scott says, with alcohol.
Yes, Scott. Well, thank you for that. Such an interesting experience. I mean, you know, with regard to, you know, learning this, mm-hmm. being brought up in a family where everybody, you know, as a matter of just habit, drank, of course, you learned that this is just, you know, it's part of life. It's something that, you know, everybody in the family did. What is interesting also about what you said is it doesn't just have effects on things like anxiety and depression, but even your experience of, you know, religious feeling. And it makes me wonder whether, to some extent, if you have had alcohol and you're very, very calm and relaxed, you know, there's less of a drive to, you know, want to, you know, calm yourself with other means or center yourself with other means, like, you know, thinking about, you know, religious practice. It's fascinating.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us, Scott. We heard on the Ideas Network Facebook page, Gabe writes, I'm trying dry January. He says, I've had the energy to exercise more. My sleep has been much better. My mood much more stable. Spending less money, especially when dining out, can be kind of dull at times. Gabe says, I find I've been drinking more caffeine and eating more sugar. And when you aren't drinking, you notice how intense and pervasive drinking culture is in Wisconsin. For better and for worse. Dr. Friedman, for someone doing what Gabe is doing and doing dry January, what do you recommend they think of as February rolls around?
It's such a great question. I mean, it may be that it's such a positive experience to see how vivid life is when you don't have alcohol and how alert you are and how much more energy you have that you just might decide to extend dry January into a different relationship with alcohol going forward entirely. Maybe, you know, it's a wake-up call that alcohol at the level you were drinking before really decreases the quality of your life in a way that you either want to have as little as possible or none at all.
We'll go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us now in Stevens Point. Chris, hello.
Hello. I just had a question. I also grew up in a family that really had alcohol in their lives every day in one form or another, if it was sometimes too much. I've been sober now for 30 years, but the my grandfather at one time, I was told that my grandfather didn't drink at all, but he did have a drink first thing in the morning when he got up about 5 o'clock. He would have a brandy or a something like that, just a shot first thing in the morning. What are there any health benefits to doing, you know, to drinking like that?
Chris, thanks for the call. Now, Dr. Freeman, I remember there was, I think in the 80s and 90s, you'd see little studies saying, oh, a drink maybe may have these modest health benefits. It seems like I don't see that kind of thing so much anymore.
Right. So Chris brings up a very interesting question, which gets to yours. And that is, usually when people drink in the morning, almost always, it's a sign that they have an alcohol problem, meaning that they are drinking in the morning because they feel, without that drink, nervous and edgy. And it's usually a sign of tolerance to alcohol. I would be surprised if it weren't the case. It's unusual to hear otherwise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as for the question of, you know, is there a level of alcohol which is healthy? The more we seem to learn about alcohol, the answer seems closer to, well, probably not. That, you know, it was thought that there's a benefit to very low levels of alcohol. But in terms of the studies that have been done recently, it's hard to show that those benefits are actually as real as we thought that they were.
Chris, thanks a lot for sharing that experience with us. Sarah is with us next in Madison. Sarah, hi.
Hi. I was just saying that I did a self-experiment a few years ago where I was drinking like a beer every night with dinner, and then I'd go out on Friday nights with my friends and drink two or three or four. And I would had this low-grade depression, and I realized that I was waking up on Saturday mornings with a heavier sadness and kind of despair. So I thought, well, I'll try taking out the every night beer, and my depression went away.
Wow. Sarah, thanks for sharing that. Dr. Freeman, what do you think?
Sarah, that is a beautiful demonstration of the depressant effect of alcohol, and classic. So you notice that a modest amount during the week didn't have the effect, but if you had three beers the next morning, you would wake up feeling sad, down, low, because the alcoholic effect initially is relaxing, but hours later, it's actually a depressant. It brings about a feeling of low energy and depressed mood.
Sarah, thanks a lot for sharing that story. Dr. Freeman, Sarah did something that it seems like it's hard for people to do, including some of your patients, connecting the dots between the drink last night and that feeling this afternoon or over the weekend.
Yes, exactly. But she did a beautiful experiment. And, you know, she saw the results and they were conclusive for her.
Now, for people already dealing with, say, anxiety or depression, I mean, as you've said, self-medicating with alcohol doesn't seem to work. It makes things worse, probably. Does it also keep us from seeking out treatments that might help us?
Yes, that's a wonderful point. I think it does. I think largely it's because when people are trapped in the cycle of drinking and anxiety and depression, they actually don't realize that their attempts to make themselves feel better are actually making them feel worse, and really going ahead to get treatment that would help them, like therapy or perhaps medication or both.
I want to look at our cultural attitudes toward drinking. A couple of our callers have mentioned, you know, growing up in families where daily alcohol was the norm. A couple of people on Facebook have talked about Wisconsin's pervasive drinking culture, as Gabe said. Are you hopeful that things like, you know, a dry January or other projects like that might lead people to rethink their cultural connection to alcohol?
I think habits are not destiny, and we can change them. And I think that when you have experiences like Dry January, your friends have experiences like your last caller mentioned, you can actually look at that and think, you know, maybe I could benefit by changing my behavior. So I think, you know, culture obviously has a powerful influence on us for good and bad. And it's possible through, you know, education to change aspects of culture for the better.
And finally, for people who are saying, you know, I'm a moderate drinker, but I don't want to give it up completely. Is there a benefit from going from moderate to, I don't know, occasional drinking?
I would say the answer depends on whether you experience something in everyday life that you think is less than desirable. Like, for example, suppose you said, you know, I don't really notice there are terrible effects of alcohol, but I'm kind of tired more than I used to be. Or my recall is not as sharp and fast as it was. Or I'm verbally not as fluent as I used to be. I would say, don't assume that's just age or the passage of time, and just do a very simple experiment. Cut back on the alcohol or stop it for a couple of weeks and observe how all of your, how your life is and how you feel and how you think.
Dr. Friedman, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Dr. Richard Friedman, director of the Psychopharmacology Clinic at Weill Cornell Medical College. He joined us today for a look at the connections between alcohol and our mental health. If you're doing Dry January or something like it, love to hear from you. We've got a post up over at the Ideas Network Facebook page.